Welcome back to the Gerwick Report. It is episode 39 of the podcast that tells it like it is. It is Monday, July the 21st, 2014. I am Steve Gerwick, along with my longtime tag team partner, Frank D. We're going to talk about last night's pay-per-view, the Battleground pay-per-view on the WWE Network. We're going to talk about the situation with Lana and Rusev that's got the media talking today. We're going to talk about TNA and the situation with their house shows and lack of fans at their house shows. And we're also talking a little bit about Ring of Honor and their television situation right now. So we got an interesting podcast for you today. And let's say what's up to Frank D.
What's up, Steve? And we are the podcast that tells it like it is. But you know what? Somebody over the weekend said that it was getting pretty pathetic around here because we tell it like it is.
Wow. Pathetic, huh?
Pathetic. I told the jabroni, hey, you can go pay $25 a month somewhere else, and if it's so pathetic around here, you get marked.
We're going to talk about the TNA situation. Of course, Frank D. and the Jackal did a podcast over the weekend. Really want to plug both podcasts. Frank D. and Jackal were shooting on Bubba Ray, which we'll talk about on this podcast, and a follow-up thoughts on what's going on with TNA and their social media situation. And then also I want to plug that Atlee Green did a great solo podcast, which is hard to do, but got into racism in wrestling and also talked about the Kenta situation in WWE and how he might be utilized. So definitely check out those archives at Gerwick.net. Go to our audio section. And you can also listen to us. We should also mention up front here, we're on Spreaker, we're on Stitcher, we're on iTunes, and we're also on TuneIn. So you get a lot of ways you can check out the Gerwick Report podcast. But Frank, last night was the WWE Battleground pay-per-view on the WWE Network. Again, your $9.99 subscription included the pay-per-view. And I always got to ask this up front because I was getting some tweets and some Facebook messages. Issues streaming the pay-per-view live on the WWE Network. Did Frank D. experience any streaming issues last night with Battleground?
Actually, yes. It was kind of freezing on the PS3 to the point where I decided to watch the rest of the show on my Samsung Galaxy S5. And after that, I had no problem. So it was streaming issues going on in my household. And I read that it was also issues in other people's households as well.
We put up a little blurb on Facebook, and people were saying they had trouble with their Xbox 360, PlayStation 3. Some people had trouble streaming it through the website, the WWE.com website. So, again, here we are in July and still streaming issues on different devices last night. Now, I personally had no trouble with my Roku 2 last night watching the pay-per-view. So I will say, in my situation, I had no streaming issues. I guess if I had any issues last night, it would have been with the pay-per-view itself. I didn't think the pay-per-view was anything special. In fact, Frank D., when I finished watching the show, it's like I just paid $10 to watch Raw last night.
Yeah, including with the Raw stage. Isn't that funny?
That's right. The set was there last night.
Yeah. No creativity whatsoever anymore.
No. Now, I want to say up front, I did not watch the pre-show. But in looking at the results of the pre-show, there were two matches on the pre-show, and I was just doing the math real quickly here. Between Adam Rose versus Fandango and Cameron versus Naomi, on the 30-minute pre-show, you would end up with 4 minutes and 42 seconds of actual wrestling.
Wow.
What a pre-show that was.
Well, that pre-show is there to sell,
hype you up.
Sell network subscriptions. But here's the problem with that. If we're watching the pre-show, that means we already have the damn network. How about that?
That is true. That is true. I don't know. Is the pre-show still airing on DirecTV and Comcast, et cetera? Are those still out there? I don't know.
Well, the problem with that is that DirecTV, along with Dish, along with AT&T UVerse, don't carry WWE
Dropped
pay-per-views
them.
Anymore. That's right.
That's right. That's right. It's only on cable now.
It's only on cable, and I'm pretty sure cable gets the pre-show. But like I just said, if you're watching the pre-show, that means that you have to have bought the pay-per-view. See, there's this misconception that people can watch the pre-show for free, and after it's done, it goes right to the pay-per-view, and you have to order that. That ain't the way it works. You have to order the pay-per-view in order to see the pre-show.
Great.
Yeah. So if I'm watching it, you're telling me, oh, subscribe to the WWE Network and you get all this great content for $9.99 a month. That's under $10. Yeah.
Yeah, they really were hyping up the network last night. I know they had the announcers, JBL, Michael Cole, and Jerry Lawler talk about, after the first match, what great action, and you can get it for $9.99, and then you're going to watch all the pay-per-views for $9.99 a month. So last night was really a hype show, I think, for the network. And because let's face it, Frank, the Battleground pay-per-view between Money in the Bank and SummerSlam is a throwaway pay-per-view. It's a transitional pay-per-view. We knew the outcomes of most of the matches. We knew the main event, how it was going to play out. So really there was no real reason to watch the pay-per-view last night unless you were just a big WWE fan and really wanted to see what was going on.
It was a three-hour infomercial for the WWE yep. Network is all it was. And I have no problem with that because they have to push the network. They have to push the subscriber account because, you know something, Steve? It's not enough to push it 3 hours on Monday night. And then you got to push it again on Main Event, and you got to push it again on SmackDown. Well, actually, Main Event is not yet crazy because that's a WWE Network exclusive now. So you have to push it on your Raw, and you have to push it on your SmackDown. Why the WWE is not buying advertising in any other market as far as commercials on different TV stations for the WWE Network, I don't understand that.
It's probably the same question. Why isn't TNA buying commercial time during Raw on local stations to hype Impact is on Spike TV?
You know what? They did that one time years ago, but nobody gave a damn.
And we're going to talk about TNA and their situation coming up. But let's talk about the pay-per-view itself. The pay-per-view started out excellent with the Usos against the Wyatt family. And they had a best of three falls. It was the heels going over in the first fall, the Wyatt family. And then it was that old school booking of, you know, the baby faces have to come back. They have to win two straight falls. No chance tonight. The Wyatts are on a roll. And, of course, the Usos pulled it out. Frank, I got to think this is one of the matches of the year candidates. This is one of the best tag matches I remember seeing in a long time. And I guess it really put the bar pretty high because after this match, I thought the pay-per-view really kind of fell off the map because this match was just outstanding.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny because about, you know, a year ago almost, people were talking about how much the other members of the Wyatt family sucked, about how Harper and Rowan were just terrible. And I got to tell you, man, Luke Harper is just like, damn, this guy learned how to do high-fly maneuvers. For a guy his size, he shouldn't be able to do that. People said that for years about Taker, and Luke Harper is just unbelievable out there. Him and Rowan. Rowan still needs a little work, but Harper has it together. And I thought last night they had a great 2 out of 3 falls match for the WWE Tag Team Championships. I, for one, though, I did not like the ending of the match. I thought it was time for a title change, and I thought it would have been better if the Usos would chase the Wyatts for the Tag Team belts. And now that this match has ended this feud, it kind of makes you wonder who's next in line for a WWE Tag Team Championship match in the Ascension from NXT. Also sent out a tweet talking about, you know, the Usos. And I can see maybe the Ascension being brought up now to feud with the Usos because they have nobody else to feud with other than maybe a Stardust Goldust Tag Team.
That was my thought, too. I was a little disappointed that they didn't give the titles to the Wyatts. I thought if they gave the titles to the Wyatts last night, that could have set up the rubber match, the third match at the SummerSlam pay-per-view. Now, the question really would be, is if the Wyatts are done getting their chance for the tag titles, where do they go? And, you know, you had a thought there with Ascension, but I don't know. Is Ascension going to get a title shot at SummerSlam? Probably not. So you have to think, who's going to challenge them at SummerSlam?
You know what? You have time, though. If the Ascension came out tonight and they immediately started something with the Usos, you have time enough to get people to familiarize themselves with the Ascension and also get ready for the Ascension to face the Usos at SummerSlam. It's a match that hasn't happened. It's a fresh tag team. It's a fresh new, you know, tag team in the division. And I think they could, they would work well together. I think that people, you know, probably thought that the Usos and the Wyatts would not have good chemistry, and they did. So why not bring the Ascension up here and see what the Ascension can do on the big stage as opposed to the NXT?
I just think with the fans reacting last night to this match, it really got the fans excited for the card. I think they really kind of dropped off with the Rusev situation, with Lana's cutting that promo, which we'll talk about coming up. But to me, Frank, we don't see a lot of tag teams in wrestling today. We don't see a lot of tag teams in WWE. They split them up. They don't keep them together very long. And when I watched that match last night, and I just saw the fans so into this match and the close pinfalls, and it looked like so many times that the Wyatt family was going to end up winning the tag titles, that the wrestling fans out there still like tag team wrestling. And if you give them two functional tag teams that's been together for a while, and they just tear down the house, the fans are going to react to that. And we don't, as I said, we don't see tag team wrestling today. So if you give us good tag team wrestling, fans are going to pop for it.
Right, of course, because it's exciting. You know, it's really, it's just a different story that's being told in a tag match as opposed to a one-on-one match. And when you have two teams out there that are pretty much really over with the crowd, like the Usos and the Wyatts, and it's for the tag team championship, that just makes it more important for the belts. I think maybe the only belts that matter right now in the company are the world titles and the tag team championships.
The penny belts.
Penny belts. which I still stick by. Those are two of the ugliest belts I ever seen.
They really are. But what a tremendous match. They had a tremendous match on the last Money in the Bank, the last pay-per-view. And it was, like I said, it was disappointing to see that series end if that's the direction they're going and they're not going to do a rematch again at SummerSlam, which they probably won't. I guess we'll find out more tonight with Raw. Raw is, of course, the prelude now to the SummerSlam build. We know the main event, and Brock Lesnar is going to be on the show tonight. So obviously they're going to go in that direction. But we're going to find out tonight probably which direction they go with the tag titles. Disappointing that, as you said, the Wyatts really earned that tag titles opportunity last night, and they didn't go in that direction. That was my only, I agree with Frank, my only criticism of that match was, I think it was time to switch the titles, go with the Wyatts, and like I said, Frank, if they would have switched the titles last night, then you could have had Usos, Wyatts all over again at SummerSlam, and that would have guaranteed you a great match at SummerSlam, because already the SummerSlam card is not looking all that great.
No, it's being headed off by a match that we saw a few years ago at Extreme Rules. And quite frankly, it wasn't that good. And, you know, they're saying, oh, it's going to be the biggest monster in WWE versus the greatest athlete in WWE with John Cena versus Brock Lesnar. And it's like, I'm not really hyped to see that. I'm just not.
And then next up on the pay-per-view, we had AJ Lee against Paige. AJ Lee looked as good as she always does, but I know you're not a big fan of Paige, and she doesn't do much for me either. I just don't think this is a program that I really want to see, and wasn't real impressed with that match last night either.
Yeah, AJ looked phenomenal out there. AJ tried to get a good match on Paige. It just wasn't working.
And that's weird because I know when Paige was in Shimmer, there was a lot of hopes that she'd be a up-and-coming women's star, and maybe she still will be at some point, and she's still pretty new on the scene, but right now, she's just not clicking with the WWE Universe at all.
Well, you know, the thing about it, too, is that she's not clicking with the WWE Universe. She maybe was when she was a champion, but that was just because AJ Lee was gone. And now that AJ Lee is back, you can tell who here is a superstar and who's not. And on top of that, man, when you don't have the machine behind you, Vince McMahon is not a fan of Paige. So,
no, that's right.
So when he's not a fan of something, a la Adam Rose, you see what happens. It's only a matter of time before they start having Paige backstage doing vignettes with Sonic Food.
Or with the budget cuts, she might be right out the window.
I don't think it's going to come to that. I just think that she's going to be de-pushed like an Emma.
No, that could be as well. And then this is where the pay-per-view, I think, really lost a lot. I think going from a really hot tag match to a Divas match, which was not hyping the crowd, then we had Lana come out with set up Rusev versus Swagger. She cut a promo about the Malaysian plane being shot down in Ukraine. She brought up that people are blaming Russia. She also mentioned that with Putin, you have a strong leader, and of course with Obama, you have a basically a wuss, which quite frankly I agree with that. But what really didn't click with the fans here was this promo at all. It didn't get over, and I think it really killed that crowd, Frank, because I think they were still, even though they had the Divas match after that, they still were somewhat of a hot crowd, and then they had this promo where they brought up politics and world events, and it's just not working, and we're finding out today that WWE is getting a lot of criticism for bringing up the Malaysian plane situation, bringing up Russia, and getting kind of a backlash today, use one of their phrases, a backlash. And I just think it's time to end this Russia situation, because as far as I'm concerned, we're not at war with Russia. Yeah, we may have some heat with them right now, but last I checked, we're not at war with Russia. So why hype it up so much like we are in a hot feud with Russia as we were during the Cold War in the 80s?
The thing about it is that I remember when Rusev first came onto the scene and he was being built as, you know, this Bulgarian brute. And then all of a sudden it turned into him being this, you know, Russian sympathizer, Russian wrestler now, and it just doesn't click. I mean, every time I see Lana out there, I think of Rocky IV. You know? So it just doesn't do anything for me. And I think Rusev is going to go far. I mean, obviously they're going to build Rusev up to facing John Cena, and the mighty John Cena will conquer the Russian nightmare. No pun intended, Nikita Koloff, but he will, you know, he will overpower Rusev, and that'll be the end of Rusev. But I'm just, you know, I'm like you. It's too much, you know, controversy going on right now with this Malaysian plane incident, and they need to go get away from that as soon as possible. And they also need to stop knocking the president on their TV show. I'm not a president. I'm not a fan of the president, and I don't think WWE should be, you know, knocking Obama every single time they get around, because they might have fans out there who are fans of the president. So that might be also a negative backlash for WWE.
I think you make a good point. I think when we watch professional wrestling, we want a release from world events.
Exactly.
We want a release from presidential politics. And, you know, they did that one week where they had Snowden out there on the screen. Not a lot of wrestling fans even know who Snowden is.
Right.
So, you know, why bring up this situation right now? I thought it was in bad taste as well. I agree with people. But, you know, as we were talking in show prep, you know, why are fans surprised? This is the WWE. They do that kind of stuff, and it is in poor taste, and I agree with it. But I guess one of the bigger questions is, you know, why are fans surprised? They've done this a lot in the past in WWE.
Yeah, every time something goes down, that's, you know, a major incident. The WWE is going to try to get any type of heat they possibly can to get some type of mainstream into their brand. And right now they're doing that with the Russian sympathizer gimmick, and it's a backlash on the floor right now. And after last night, I don't think they're going to quit with it. I think that they're going to keep on going with it. And it's just, you know, people bring up the fact that Muhammad Hassan's character in 2005 was halted because of what happened with the London bombings. And then WWE did that skit on SmackDown where these guys came out dressed like members of the Taliban, and they attacked The Undertaker, and then they ended up carrying Daivari to the back in a way like they were, like he was a martyr or something like that. So the UPN says, we don't want this on the show. You need to get rid of Hassan. And that ended Hassan's push. I thought Hassan was probably going to go all the way to the world title. That's how much heat he was. He was the number one heel at that time. So I hope that this doesn't happen for Rusev. I hope the WWE is smarter about it this time around. He just get away from that whole Russian thing, and just, you can present him in a different way. But something tells me they're going to just keep going with it and going with it and going with it. And Rusev is going to end up getting that go-away heat instead of getting the heel heat that he wants.
And not to mention, last night, I really didn't like the ending of this match, a count-out. I would have liked to have seen someone pinned. I mean, if Rusev is the guy you're pushing, then have him beat Swagger. And I know Swagger right now is getting a good crowd reaction from the fans, but if Rusev is the guy you're building up to be the next monster heel, why didn't Rusev go over clean last night?
You know, I was surprised by that, too. The fact that it seemed like they went out of their way to kind of protect Swagger. And that leads me to believe that this is not the end of this particular feud. But we'll see what happens tonight on Monday Night Raw.
Which is why they're still going to probably push the Russian angle.
Right.
Still.
Yep.
So you're probably looking at a potential match at SummerSlam already between these two. And again, I think I agree with Frank, they're going to continue the pushing the Putin situation in Russia and et cetera. So don't be surprised if that continues. And yeah, we would agree it's bad taste, but this is what you get now in 2014 with WWE. And you've got it in the past with WWE as well. As Frank said, anytime they can incorporate world politics, remember when Sergeant Slaughter turned heel. So, I mean, they've done this before, so I don't know why anybody's surprised by it. And then they, of course, one of the matches that I was looking forward to on the pay-per-view last night was Rollins versus Dean Ambrose. And we really didn't get a match last night. Now, we heard something about possibly both guys being injured, and that was the reason they didn't go in that direction. I don't know, Frank, when I saw what they did last night, maybe it was just all a tease and that we're going to end up getting this match at SummerSlam because, obviously, we didn't get a match at all last night.
No, and that was very surprising. That was supposed to be one of the big matches on the show, and it turned into this big brawl, and I'm kind of like, okay, I'm not trying to watch Battleground to see a match that's been hyped up for the last couple weeks to turn into a big brawl, and that's it. I also have to say, though, I did like the spot where Dean Ambrose is in the trunk of that Charger. I thought that was pretty good. I have to give him that. That was good. It's crazy to see that the guy that I thought was going to be the heel in the whole situation, Dean Ambrose, is probably like, what, number two babyface of the company?
He's up there right now. Yeah.
And Seth Rollins is a heel. But Seth Rollins, to me, man, has this, like, he has this CM Punk kind of thing going on. You know what I mean? I see a lot of CM Punk in Seth Rollins.
Every time I see him with that attire, I think he's like a superhero.
Yeah, I'm not liking the attire too much. I think it's kind of I don't think it's the best of looks. I think that Roman Reigns has the best attire right now out of the three. You know, Dean Ambrose with the white shirt on, with the wife beater on and the pants, kind of reminds me of DDP circa 98, WCW.
Right.
But, hey, whatever works. I just thought it was a wrong move last night, though, for them to have a brawl instead of the match. People wanted to see the match last night. And that's another thing that happened, too, because when they thought that they were going to have that match, and then they didn't, and then they went right to the Divas match, it kind of killed the crowd.
I totally agree with you there as well. And then one of the matches I was looking forward to on this pay-per-view, it was a good match. Didn't blow me away. I guess I expected a little bit more out of these two, although Chris Jericho did a good job in working hard with Bray Wyatt, and Jericho is doing exactly what Jericho needs to do. He's making a new star with Bray Wyatt. We, of course, saw Bray Wyatt feud with John Cena, and now he's got this program with Chris Jericho. Chris Jericho worked really hard last night. I give him a lot of credit, but I guess, Frank, I was expecting a little bit more out of these two, and it was a good match, but it wasn't a great match.
No, they had some cookie spots in it, but you know what? That's what happens when you get two talents that are trying to find their mesh together, trying to find their chemistry together. And I'm sure this is the first of a series of matches. We'll probably see them go at it again at SummerSlam and probably at Night of Champions. So this is the first of a series. So I thought Jericho, and I'm not a Jericho fan at all, but I thought he did a pretty good job last night with Wyatt. Wyatt was really showing that instant that he had with Flair at the Garden with his face last night. It was a good match. It was, like I said, clunky at times, but I thought it was still a good match. It was better than anything else that they could have in that pre-show, I'll tell you that much.
Well, at least they did the right ending, because remember we were talking about the last podcast, if they're going to do multiple matches between the two, is have Jericho beat him on the B pay-per-view, and then Bray Wyatt gets the bigger win on SummerSlam, and I think that's probably the direction they're going to go.
Yeah, definitely. Because right now, I mean, it didn't really cost anything last night for Wyatt to lose to Jericho. It had to be that way. If Jericho would have lost to Wyatt, that would have ended the credibility right there of them having a future match, in my view.
And I think they really build it up last night, too. They were saying losing to Chris Jericho, which is what, like a six-time world champion or something like that?
Right.
That him losing to Chris Jericho, who's won almost all the titles in WWE, it's no detriment to him. And I think this program continues, and Wyatt gets the victory on the bigger stage. Remember, we wanted him to get the bigger stage win at WrestleMania, and Cena went over on Wyatt. Now, at least in this particular program, I think you have Wyatt go over Jericho on the bigger stage, SummerSlam. And yeah, I got to give Chris Jericho credit. He knows his role, and he's doing it to a great degree right now in WWE.
Yeah, and the thing about it too is that the announcers made a big deal last night when they said that Jericho beating Wyatt was a big deal. Like, they couldn't believe that he beat Bray Wyatt. So that was pretty
true.
Good that they put him over like that.
Yeah, they were selling it that way as well. That's right. And then came the Jabroni Battle Royal. I don't know how else you can really characterize it last night. We had so many guys in this match that pretty much mean nothing right now. It was to crown a new Intercontinental Champion because Bad News Barrett was injured. The title was vacated, so they put in guys like Titus O'Neil and Big E and Heath Slater and Bo Dallas and Xavier Woods, Zack Ryder, et cetera, et cetera. Great Kali, Sin Cara, going down the list. And, of course, we talked about this on really extensively on one of the previous podcasts, which you can check out at Gerwick.net, of course, in our archive section. But right now, Frank, the title means virtually nothing. And we were talking about maybe Cesaro going over and getting the championship by default. I guess since the title doesn't mean anything, look who got the championship. The Miz went over. So, they're going nowhere with this Intercontinental Championship. And I guess if nothing else, Frank, I was glad Cesaro didn't get the championship last night because it would probably hurt him more than help him.
You know, where do I even begin with the Battle Royal of typically – this is the Battle Royal. I wouldn't call it the Jabroni Battle Royal. I will call it, it was a mixture, Steve, of the great superstars of superstars.
Superstars.
And main event. And creative has nothing for you. All jumbled together in one big salad in the ring. And the dressing was the Intercontinental Championship.
And, if you will.
And... you got little lames out there like Xavier Woods. I can't stand this dude. I really just can't stand him. Like, out of all the wrestlers they could have signed from the Dead Brand, TNA, they signed Xavier Woods. You know, and I'm going to get to the Battle Royal in a second here, Steve, but just think about that for a minute. Okay? I'm going to name some names. AJ Styles. You know, Chris Sabin, Alex Shelley. Samoa Joe, you know.
Daniels,
Kazarian, Cowboy James Storm, Bobby Roode, you know, at one point the Amazing Red, et cetera, et cetera. You bring over Consequences Creed. You bring over this lame, just Soul Train dancer. I mean, really, come on. The guy came out last night. I can hear the people in the audience say, who the hell is this guy? Xavier Woods, what? I mean, come on, man. Really? Seriously? This is this guy here? This hairy bastard? Really? Anyways, now I'm ranting about that. The Battle Royal. Cesaro, Steve. What happened
Cesaro.
To Cesaro?
I don't know.
Cesaro was so much momentum. So much momentum for months heading into WrestleMania. Was going to have a big blow-off feud with Jack Swagger. The moment that he becomes a Paul Heyman guy is the moment that his momentum ceases to exist. And now that Brock Lesnar is back, they've kind of split them up for the time being. And Cesaro came out there. You know, usually Cesaro comes out there and he gets some favorable crowd reaction. Last night, nobody gave a damn when he came out there.
Nope.
So his momentum is gone. And you can tell that something's going on here. Because they give The Miz, who has been Intercontinental Champion I don't know how many times, he's a failed brand, yet they put the belt on him. His gimmick now, Steve, is he's supposed to protect his face. He's supposed to protect his moneymaker, which he should have done that years ago. How he got Maurice, I'll never know. Anyways, they put the belt on this guy for what reason, I don't understand. And the Intercontinental Championship is just pretty much the biggest detriment to your career if you get it. So maybe it's a good thing that Cesaro didn't get it. I mean, Dolph Ziggler was out there last night, and he didn't get it. I don't know what they would have done for him anyways, but I, for one, did not like the result of that Battle Royal. Why we even had a Battle Royal to begin with, I don't understand it. Why did they just do a King of the Ring type tournament, or why did they do they could have did a scramble match or anything. But why do we have a Battle Royal?
I have no idea. And now we're hearing that with The Miz winning, they may do a unification match for the U.S. Championship that unify the U.S. and IC straps, so possibly The Miz versus Sheamus at SummerSlam. Who cares? Honestly, who cares about that match?
Who cares about the U.S. Championship? I mean, honestly, Steve, I didn't even know until I was watching it back before we started doing the podcast this morning. I honestly didn't even know who the U.S. champion was. And then it was like, oh, here's Sheamus with the belt. Oh, Sheamus is the U.S. champ. That's how irrelevant the U.S. championship is. The great days of the U.S. championship in the NWA to the WCW are long gone. Even the days of U.S. championship back in the SmackDown era are long gone. This belt is a joke. It's a piece of crap belt now. They need to just get away with it. And the Intercontinental Championship, I wouldn't mind if they got rid of that out.
Well, The Miz winning. Remember, we ran that poll at Gerwig.net. Do you think The Miz deserves another push? And more people than not said, yeah, let's push him again, which I have no idea. I mean, we've tried this trick how many times now, and it doesn't work. I mean, they pushed him to the World Heavyweight Championship, and it didn't go anywhere. So now Miz has got the championship, and Frank, if they do unification, you know what they're going to do. The IC champion's going to win. So The Miz is going to beat Sheamus, if that's the direction they're going to go, and the U.S. championship will be gone.
Well, I'm not going to be sad to see it go, but no. I will say that they could do a lot with the U.S. championship. I mean, they should have already come out. I got polled a few months ago about them possibly coming out with a U.S. championship DVD, the greatest U.S. champions of all time. So they could do something with that as far as, you know, archival footage. But I'm not interested in seeing The Miz versus Sheamus. I'm not interested in seeing The Miz and anybody. And see, the people that voted that The Miz needed to be pushed are probably the same people that thought that CM Punk was going to come back to WWE.
And he hasn't.
And he's gone.
His contract's expired and he's gone.
And he's gone. So for all those people out there that thought Punk was going to come back, and you thought it was a work, and it was a swerve, and he's just doing this and doing that, the guy is gone. He's living out there in Chirac right now. So he's gone.
The guy who I felt the worst for last night was Dolph Ziggler. You just feel like they've totally dropped the ball on this guy. And you were talking about Cesaro being, you know, have some momentum. And there's so many guys I can think of just – they had some momentum, and WWE drops the ball with them. And Ziggler was a charismatic guy that was clicking with the fans, and they just dropped the ball on him too. And not that, you know, him winning the championship would have meant anything last night, because as you said, the IC title means virtually nothing. But I just felt bad for Dolph Ziggler last night. There was a guy who still has potential, who they still could do something with, but I don't know, Frank. Maybe he's just too damaged, and they just figured he's just a jabroni, just another guy out there right now.
Yeah, Dolph Ziggler. They've dropped the ball with Dolph Ziggler many times over the years, way before the concussion ever happened. You remember when Dolph Ziggler was out there with Vicky Guerrero, and they got rid of the blonde hair, and they gave him this. Dyed his hair brown or something like that, and they cut it. And he was supposed to be the new Dolph Ziggler, and that wasn't getting over, and they had to go back to the blonde hair. Remember that?
That's right. Yep.
So that was way before the concussions ever happened. They've been dropping the ball with Ziggler for a long time. And the guy is still over. And, you know, I personally, at this point, they need some attitude in that roster, man. They need some attitude at WWE, and I would love to see just this faction of these guys, like a Dolph Ziggler and a Zack Ryder, Sandow, Titus O'Neil, all these different guys come together in a faction.
And just the new, like, job squad.
Just you know, or something to that effect.
Yeah, right.
Because these are a lot of guys getting to the center. Why Titus O'Neil is not on top right now is beyond me. The guy has a look. He's a charismatic guy. I don't understand why he's not on top of the company right now. In the Intercontinental title, we've gone down this route already with The Miz as being anything. It's time to push somebody else. And I thought they could have gave the belt to O'Neil last night and pushed him to go up against Sheamus. At least it would be something new. But they want to go back to The Miz, a failed brand. I don't give a damn how many Marine movies a guy do. The dude can do a movie called The Sergeant. It would still be the same thing.
That's right.
It's a failed brand.
Maybe the faction be called Held Back. All the guys that are being held back now in WWE could form a new group. Yeah,
yeah.
I like that idea.
Our future endeavors.
That's right.
Yeah.
Future endeavor. And in fact, you know, you're going back to your rant on WWE signed Consequences Creed, and they passed up a guy like Kazarian. Well, actually, they did sign Kazarian, remember?
I remember when Kazarian was there. That's right. Kazarian was there.
And they wanted him to cut his hair.
Yeah, he was there years ago. I remember he was a cruiserweight champion, and he did a lot of his stuff on Velocity. I missed that show. I really missed Velocity, man. They need to put that on the network along with Sunday Night Heat. But anyways, not the MTV Heat. I'm talking about the Sunday Night Heat back in the day with USA. Don't add to there. Not that crap that they were taping in SmackDown. But anyways, yeah. You know, Kazarian was there. He was a great cruiserweight champion. Kazarian is a guy who can come in WWE right now. He can go out there and have some great matches with a lot of different people. But, hey, what are you going to do?
At least he's in Ring of Honor right now. That's something that will pique people's interest, you know, bad influence in Ring of Honor. But you were mentioning, when you were talking about Dolph Ziggler cutting his hair or changing his hair, that reminded me of Kazarian. Because he was there, and they wanted him to cut his hair, and he said, no thanks, see you later.
Yeah, but he ended up cutting his hair anyways when he went back to TNA.
True. That's right.
Yeah.
I wonder what would have happened to Kazarian if he would have cut his hair in WWE.
He probably would have went to the top.
You think so? He would have pushed him all the way to
I think he would have went to the top. But you got to understand something, man. Kazarian was in the same class. This is unbelievable. If it ever came a time where either Kazarian or Daniels would come on, you know, the podcast or do anything with Derek.net, I'd bring it up that, you know, you guys were, you, Kazarian, you know, Daniels, Kazarian, Samoa Joe, and John Cena, they were all in the same class at UPW, Rick Bassman. Now, isn't that wild to think that?
Wow.
They were all in the same class. And yet, out of the four of them, three of these guys are on wrestle.
Was Victoria there at the same time as well?
You know what? She might have been. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
She might have been.
That's a heck of a camp.
That's crazy when you think about that. I was just thinking about that the other day because I see these videos all the time on YouTube of Tom Howard, you know, teaching a class, and John Cena's doing all the moves, but he's messing up, and he has to get somebody else to come in to do it. And he calls in Samoa Joe, so you actually see Samoa Joe and John Cena kind of lock up doing stuff there. It's just crazy, man, where everybody's careers went and the different routes they took. And this guy here who can't do a decent STF is the guy that's on top.
You know, I think this really speaks to the fact that WWE and TNA, in character development, talent development, it's really lacking right now. And I know NXT has its developmental center, and they have it all under one roof. But, Frank, back in the day when they would have Rick Bassman, it was like the rookie camp, and then you'd go up to Louisville or you go down to Deep South and work with Jody Hamilton down there. And or you could possibly be sent to Puerto Rico. I believe they had an affiliation with IWA at one time as well. That was the way to learn. You were with Rick Bassman for a time, and you learned to work a crowd out there, and you worked the talent that was there. And then you go to Louisville and you work against different talent and a different crowd. Then possibly you go to Deep South, or you go to Deep South first and go to Louisville second or third, But you develop something. You develop your character. You develop a presence. You develop your facials. You work against different opponents. And now with NXT, is they're all working the same talent. They're all under one roof. And you look at all the stars that came through Louisville, who came from Rick Bassman's group, who went down to Deep South and learned. And now this, and again, it goes back to what I said in the last podcast about TNA having a developmental agreement with Danny Davis at one time. Just blown opportunities. You know, sign somebody, send them to a territory, like the old territory days back in wrestling. Learn, work against different talent, different crowd, go to a next territory, different crowd. Different crowd reacts differently. Not every crowd's the same, as we've seen so many times in wrestling. Different talent, different styles. Cut your promos, get your facials down, etc. Go to the next territory. And then when you're done with those three territories, then you're ready for the main roster. But nowadays, it's NXT, and now NXT's on TV. I don't know. It just seems like they missed the boat. And as I said, TNA had their opportunity with OVW, and it went absolutely nowhere. Just a real sad situation right now with talent development in professional wrestling.
Yeah, big time. I mean, there is no territorial system anymore for the guys to go. So that's why they have the Performance Center. That's what Triple H says. You know, the problem is
you work with the same guys over and over. You don't learn different styles.
Well, you know what?
You don't get different crowds. I know they go on the road with NXT, but you know the crowd in Florida is different than the crowd in California.
Yeah, I get that. You know, I understand that. But, you know, that's the reason why they had a Performance Center, is to get people used to character development. I mean, apparently with the Performance Center, I'd like to visit it. If I'm ever in Florida, which is not likely, but if I'm ever in Florida, I'd like to visit the Performance Center because they have a state-of-the-art TV studio down there where they actually can develop these characters and get these guys ready. But like you said, the problem is that they don't go from town to town working. And NXT is just not a brand that's viable to do that. It's not a brand that you can put in a Staples Center or something like that. It has to be on a smaller scale, but it's like it wouldn't actually draw. Because how many people actually watch NXT? And the problem with that is that you got a guy down there like Bill DeMott, who is teaching these guys this one style, and that's a WWE style. And you say character development. Well, what character development did Bill DeMott ever have to begin with, outside of being Hugh Morris and being the little run he had there in WWE in 2003, I believe it was. I mean, this guy wasn't a big. I mean, General Rection in WCW, really?
Well, that was Vince Russo.
that doesn't matter. I mean, who was Hugh Morris?
Yeah. Oh, we're going to talk about Vince Russo too on this podcast. We got to mention this guy as well. Unbelievable what's going on with TNA, but we'll get to that momentarily. But I just the sad situation. They had a great developmental system at one time, and now it's all in. And I got no knock against the Performance Center. I know WWE's put a lot of money into it, and you know Triple H is producing good NXT television. But like you said, unless they have WWE talent on their shows, it's not going to draw, and you can't take it on the road as a touring brand. You know they had a system that really worked. Look at all the stars that came from OVW in the final leg before they jumped to the big show, like Batista and John Cena. Randy Orton, et cetera, Victoria, all came through that system. So,
well, a lot of that avenue, a lot of that too, and the guy doesn't get the credit because you know people say he's a loudmouth, but a lot of that had to do with Jim Cornette.
Oh, sure, absolutely.
When talent was right to come up, I mean, give the devil his due. You know, Jim Cornette is outspoken, and Jim Cornette probably does a lot and says a lot to get a reaction, but give the guy his due. The guy's been around. He's been around. People say. Somebody said on the website like 2 weeks ago talking about Cornette. Cornette never really booked anything ever or was ever associated with anything that was great or made money. And I'm thinking to myself, dude, do you guys remember a tag team called the Midnight Express? are you kidding
me?
I do. Do you remember a wrestler in the WWE that was WWE champion? His name was Yokozuna.
I do remember him. Yes.
You guys remember a former WCW World Heavyweight Champion? His name was, I mean, he wasn't much of nothing when he came over, but his name was Big Man Vader, who yep. Jim Cornette managed. Jim Cornette managed the British Bulldog. He managed the Bulldog and Owen Hart when they were, I believe they were the tag team champions. Or it might have been Owen and Yokozuna who were tag team champions. They were all part of Camp Cornette. What the hell are you talking about? You know, the guy helped book a lot of that OVW TV down there. before the developmental system went down the way, and then they had Paul Heyman doing it for a while. All the developmental system, you know, WWE pulled out of OVW, and they started working with just strictly Steve Kern in Florida with the revamped Florida Championship Wrestling. So they did that, but you remember they had a lot of people they were working with back in the day. You know, they had you know, like you said, Rick Basman's group. They had Les Thatcher's Heartland Wrestling that they were doing stuff with. But like you said, you know, just there is the territorial developmental system is gone. It's all about the Performance Center now. WWE sends people to the Performance Center, and that's where they expect you to grow and develop as a talent. And if you can't grow and develop there, most likely you're not going to make it to the main roster.
And you were talking about Cornette's evaluation process. I remember when they brought up the Heartthrobs. Remember the Heartthrobs?
Yeah, I remember. They debuted, I think, at the Garden.
And they were clearly not ready for television.
Nope.
Jim Cornette told them they weren't ready for television. They hot-shotted them, and look where their careers has gone. They're basically independent workers right now.
Well, and he also said this guy wasn't ready. They said, give this guy another 2 years, 3 years tops, and he might be ready. Chris Masters.
There was actually another guy as well. He said if they keep this guy in developmental system, he's going to be a main eventer at WrestleMania someday. And he's a guy who had a lot of potential and never quite got to that top level. Matt Morgan.
Yeah.
He was so high on Matt Morgan as a future WrestleMania main eventer.
Yep.
He said, keep him with me. And they said, nope, we're going to hotshot him.
Yep.
And Matt never quite achieved the level of success that Cornette had seen for him. And I mean, right now, he's basically out of wrestling right now. So maybe Cornette knows what he's talking about.
I would think he does. And that's the thing about Triple H. He doesn't want these guys hot-shotted anymore up to the main roster. They got to prove themselves first at NXT before they're brought up. I question some of the decisions that he makes bringing some of these people up. I don't know how the hell Xavier Woods ever made it to TV. I really don't. I'm going to stay on this guy for a while. But I don't know how he ever made it up there. Biggie Langston was so hot when he was out in NXT. He was on a 5 count. He was so hot. And then they debuted him on Raw, attacking John Cena and aligning him with Dolph Ziggler and AJ. And I remember that night like it was yesterday. AJ skipping around and the crowd not giving a crap. Nobody cared.
Yeah. Adam Rose, he's not over. Bo Dallas, I mean, these guys that move up to the main roster, a lot of these guys, this is the best they have.
Isn't it funny how Bray Wyatt is out there and Bo Dallas is his brother? And one of them is over and the other one's not.
Yeah.
That's just remarkable to me.
Unbelievable, the developmental process right now. And I think that's one of the main reasons that WWE is so stale is they're just not finding characters that's going to, you know, really click with the universe right now. Okay, they don't hotshot them anymore, but clearly you're seeing guys that are not ready or they just don't have the right gimmicks for them. I mean, Adam Rose, who thought that was a good idea? I mean, the guy's now he's on the pre-show on a pay-per-view working a short match against – look at this guy, Fandango. Look at where his career's gone through the developmental system,
I forgot all about Fandango. You just brought him back up. My God, man, you talk about a guy who came in with such fanfare. They took both his females away from him, and now he's out there dancing by himself. And you know what? This would be the perfect time to let Johnny Curtis just disappear. And let's revamp him into something else. Let's just do something. This is the time to pull Fandango off TV. It's not working. It never has.
Maybe he could be managed by Disco Inferno. They could just learn how to dance.
Well, you know what's funny? Disco Inferno was actually over. I mean, people can rag on Glenn Gilberti, but Glenn Gilberti actually made Disco Inferno work. I didn't mind Disco Inferno. I did not mind it at all. Disco Inferno was actually, it was a tongue-in-cheek ripoff of John Travolta, but he got it over. It worked.
Yep, I agree with you. So that's our 2 cents on the developmental process right now. I just think they just missing the boats. And when you're talking about all those guys that were in Rick Bassman's camp and a lot of guys that went through there, it's just sad that we just sign everybody developmental deals. We got 100 guys under roster down there, and they're all working against each other, and hopefully one of them can rise to the surface. If not, We just throw them out and bring in some new fish, and that's just what they're doing right now. And a few will jump out of the water and make it to the main roster, but there's been a lot of misses instead of hits there, Frank.
Well, you know,
Bray Wyatt is really kind of the exception to the rule right now.
Bray Wyatt, Seth Rollins, Roman Reigns, Dean Ambrose.
But again, I would say a lot of those guys were established guys elsewhere.
I never heard of Roman Reigns before that. I've heard of Dean Ambrose, John Moxley. Yeah, I saw that stuff in the Indies. You know, I saw Tyler
Seth
Black.
Seth Rollins was yeah. ROH champ.
Yeah, I saw Tyler Black. But I never, you know, and then I saw, at the time, Husky Harris. But
right.
I never saw Roman Reigns. I've seen Roman Reigns lately when I go back and look at the old MCW. He was actually named Leaki, was his name. So Roman Reigns is a much better name than that. And I actually saw a match on there. It's funny, I saw a match between him, Rollins, and Ambrose. It was a triple threat. It was at MCW. And these guys had so much, they hated each other down there, but then they brought them up together as a shield. So I thought that was pretty, you know, interesting in the world of wrestling. It's kind of as interesting as back in the day when you would see Hulk Hogan. For years, he wrestled the Million Dollar Man in Virgil for years, right, in WWF. And then you go over to WCW, and who was aligned with who? You know, DiBiase with Hogan. So I still get a kick out of that. So it's just those relationships in wrestling that are weird. It's kind of like a relationship if it would ever happen between Vince Russo and Jim Cornette. I mean, I understand that. You know, I understand that Wendy's has offered to settle this feud between between these two gentlemen. But we'll get to that. I wanted to say something else about the developmental real quick though.
Sure.
Kevin Steen is going to be coming up to WWE. He just had his last match the other night at ROH, and you know, it's going to be very interesting to see how they handle Steen. And how they handle Kenta coming in. Kenta has a lot of moves that a lot of people have stolen over the years and have made famous in WWE. The most obvious is the GTS.
And CM Punk's gone now, so maybe he can use it.
I don't think they want people being reminded of CM Punk. So that's not going to happen.
That could be.
Not going to happen. But I'm kind of curious to see what they do with this guy. I also, somebody said a while ago to me, Steve, and I kind of chewed them out on the website about this. They said, I was asking who the hell Prince Devitt was. And somebody says, get Edge Gay, and I told them, you know, basically, go screw themselves. I actually saw who Prince Devitt is. I actually been watching some of his stuff on YouTube lately. Phenomenal talent that's probably going to get ruined in WWE. You know, if this guy does it all, and if they change his ring style to just a WWE ring style, I don't know how that's gonna work. And
well,
talking about
the big question is Kenta.
Yeah,
I mean Kenta's a huge star, and they're talking about repackaging him, a different name, as you were saying, maybe different moves. And
well, right now they might let him keep his name.
I would keep the name. Why change it?
Right. It's like,
I mean,
Samoa
people
Joe,
know that name.
If Samoa Joe were to come over, are you gonna change Samoa Joe's name? You know, I don't.
They probably would. They don't own that.
I mean,
the only reason why
CM Punk was allowed to keep CM Punk is because he had a guy like Paul Heyman there to advocate to WWE. No, you're not going to change this guy's name. This guy's going to come into the main roster as CM Punk.
Well, maybe Heyman knows. Well, obviously Heyman's a big wrestling fan, so he knows who Kenta is. He say, "Hey, let's keep Kenta as Kenta.
Well,
let him use it, go to sleep. That's his move. Let him do it."
I'd love to see Kenta be managed by Paul Heyman.
I think that's a real good possibility. Who else are you going to put him with if he doesn't know English real well?
And I also would like to make this as a future possibility of a match. Okay, you have Kenta there in WWE, and maybe he will be a big star. I'm saying maybe because WWE's track record with Japanese wrestlers is not very good.
Stinks.
It's not good at all. We saw Kai and Tai, we saw, you know, Yoshitatsu. You know, and I'm really mad about the Yoshitatsu thing simply because the guy wanted to move to Texas and they wouldn't let him. And they didn't fire him. So that's kind of, you know, really a really crappy deal there.
Lame.
Yeah, very lame. But the thing with Kenta is I'd love to see Kenta get a push. I'd love to see Kenta really get over doing the GTS, and maybe, just maybe one day, maybe, if the stars are aligned correctly and it decides to go into a working relationship, maybe you'll have that match with CM Punk in WWE.
That's what I mean. Tease it now. People will start speculating. I'm like, look how long this Sting speculation was going on. And now it's like they're finally going to do something with him. So bring Kenta in, let him use a go to sleep, and there'll be all kinds of speculation. Oh, when are they going to hook up CM Punk and Kenta?
Yeah.
And if they do it, that'd be a hell of a match. But we'll see. You know, we just ran the poll at GirlWeek.net. Do you think Kenta will make an impact in WWE? 67% say yes. So I guess the wrestling universe is willing to give WWE the benefit of the doubt, although their track record with international talent, not all that good, as we established on the last podcast.
Well, here's the thing. The difference is this, okay? You know, I was going to defend Triple H by saying this. Triple H wasn't in charge of developmental when Yoshitatsu was signed. I think old Johnny Ace was. So Triple H just took over developmental, what, 2 years ago? Something like that?
Yeah, a couple of years ago, yeah.
Yeah, so maybe the future might be brighter for Kenta and Steed and Devitt now that Triple H is in control of that. Triple H makes the final decision as far as developmental goes. So maybe something might happen there positive and not a negative. But we shall see. I mean,
well, on the reverse side of that, you know, we're talking about developmental, and you go to NXT and you're only learning against the other NXT guys, and a lot of the guys they sign are very green and they're not established themselves. When you when you're talking about Kenta, Prince Devitt, and Kevin Steen, these are three established guys who have been working successfully in bigger promotions, Ring of Honor and New Japan, that have established fan bases, that have established moves, and have established characters. So if they don't change a lot with these guys, all three of them could really be big stars in WWE. It's just, will they do that? Will they let they have to put all these strings on them before you get on WWE television. But if they let the strings off, all three of them could be big stars in WWE.
Yeah, they could be. And that's,
but I don't see it happening.
No, I don't see it happening. Especially with Kevin Steen. You know, I don't know. It's just, I think that a lot of people are going to say it's a lot of hype with him coming in there. And it's going to be whether Triple H, you know, sees the same thing and they move towards pushing him to the championship. And somehow I just don't see it. I don't see Kevin Steen being more than a mid-carder in WWE. Does that ring of honor?
Exactly. Tell that to Matt Sydal.
Yeah. Exactly.
But it has worked for Daniel Bryan. I mean, Daniel Bryan's a good case of they didn't really think he'd ever be a big star, and he got over. I mean, if you let Kevin Steen on TV, Kevin Steen has a great fan base. I know it's Ring of Honor, and Ring of Honor is a much smaller promotion than WWE, but Kevin Steen has a fan base. And if you let Kevin Steen be pretty much Kevin Steen on your television, maybe you can call him something different if you don't like the name, but if he's basically the same character, I think he can click with the universe. It's just they always put these restrictions on these talents and just let them be who they are. This is the opposite of the developmental where all three of these guys are ready. I mean, Prince Devitt doesn't need to go to NXT, but he's going to go in there and work the WWE ring style. And you know, if they take the handcuffs off these guys, like I said, Frank, all three of them could be big stars, but probably of those three, probably only one of them will probably make it. I would just guess. Right now.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at because,
yeah.
I mean, look at, they had Chris Hero there.
True.
And him and Cesaro down there, you know, when Cesaro was Claudio Castagnoli, they were the kings of wrestling. And I thought for sure that when we had the Summer of Punk going on in WWE, I thought for sure that CM Punk would have aligned with the Hero in Cesaro. I thought for sure that was going to happen in WWE, and it didn't happen. I thought they were going to have a whole Ring of Honor stable would have been in WWE.
Right. Yeah, I remember those rumors, and yeah. That would have been real interesting and entertaining, but...
Yeah, but WWE they wanted to push, you know, Randy Orton down your throat.
That's right. Over and over again. And now The Miz is being pushed down your throat.
Exactly. And that's what I mean, being pushed down your throat. It's not like, you know, back in the day when they were pushing somebody down your throat like Rocky Maivia, and then he turned it into The Rock. We've seen The Miz already go from this reality TV star to a WWE superstar to the WWE champion, and it failed when Alex Riley was his slugging. So what makes you think that now he has the IC belt, he does a couple of WWE piece of crap movies, that he's supposed to be this big superstar, Hollywood superstar, that gimmick that they're trying to give him, and it ain't going to work.
Yeah, the difference is The Rock had talent, and The Miz doesn't. I mean, that's what it comes down to.
Talent and charisma.
That's right. Promo ability, the look, everything.
Yep.
Well, as we conclude our, we really got some side topics there, interesting conversations on a number of different issues. Going back to the pay-per-view here, the pay-per-view concluded Battleground with John Cena successfully defending his championship against Kane, Randy Orton, and Roman Reigns. I think you liked the match better than I did. I guess what really takes away the luster of this match is you know who's going to win. And we already knew John Cena was going to defend the championship against Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam. So wasn't a lot of intrigue. I think the near falls, people didn't really react for because they knew at the end John Cena was going to win. But I guess you could say, Frank, that all four of them did try very hard last night to put on a good match.
Oh, they did. It was a lot of near falls in there. And I think last night that they were trying to recreate. Do you remember back in 1990 at the Royal Rumble? They had that one epic stare down between Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior. And
yes,
the people went crazy. They were trying several times last night to recreate that moment with Roman Reigns and John Cena. And I think they had it maybe the first time or the second time, but by the third time, people were like, who cares if they lock up
yep.
or not? So they were trying to do that. And they also try to do that with Randy Orton and John Cena, and nobody cares anymore. When you've seen it 100,000 times, who cares?
So overall, Frank, I wasn't overly impressed with the show. Again, you know, we're judging these pay-per-views differently than we did years in the past because typically we would pay, what, $49.99 or $59.99 for high definition, whatever the prices were at that time. You got to remember, you paid $9.99 for this show, which, when you think about it, I mean, that's less than a WWE house show ticket. I mean, you can't get a $10 ticket for a WWE show, I wouldn't think, unless it's nosebleeds and you wouldn't see anything. But I guess the argument would be a lot of times with the house shows, you might get a better show than what you're seeing on Raw, SmackDown, or even the pay-per-view. But, I mean, did I get my money's worth last night? I guess you could essentially say the tag match was probably worth your $10. I was disappointed with the show overall. If I had to give it a, you know, some sort of rate or rating, I'd give it with thumbs in the middle. Wasn't a must-see show. It was kind of a transitional show. It was just kind of there. If you missed it, I wouldn't really wouldn't go out of my way to see it, other than to see the Usos and the Wyatt family. And I'd just say it's a must, not a must-see show, just a thumbs in the middle last night.
Yeah, it was a three-hour Monday Night Raw on a Sunday night. And an infomercial for the WWE Network. That's all it was. I give it, you know, I'm kind of in the middle with it as well. They really should have delivered that Roman Reigns, the Ambrose-Seth Rollins match, which they didn't do. They really should have
right.
delivered that.
So that's our thoughts on last night's WWE Battleground pay-per-view. You can let us know your feedback on the website. We always would appreciate anything that you can contribute to our thoughts on the show and give your two cents as well. And one of the guys that was backstage last night was kind of interesting. I wanted to mention this because, you know, we just had that long debate on WWE Hall of Fame and potential names in or out. Well, last night there was a guy named Tatanka backstage at Battleground. And I don't think that was a name we mentioned on the Hall of Fame. Would you consider Tatanka a future WWE Hall of Famer?
Tatanka was really hot when he first came in WWE. Yeah, I probably would, Steve. Yeah,
I would agree.
It's just he really let himself go over the years.
He did.
And, yep. And I'm talking about really in the prime of his career. He really let himself go. And I think that's the reason why he wasn't pushed to the Intercontinental Championship. I mean, I don't ever recall Tatanka ever holding any belts in WWE.
I don't think he did either.
Yeah. And I think a lot of that, you know, I think it was his name, was it Chris Chavez, I believe it is.
Did Junkyard Dog ever held any titles in WWE?
I don't think so, no.
I mean, there's a guy, you know, he's up for our Hall of Fame this month, and he's going to get voted down, and now it's below 50% approval, and I think a lot of people will probably look back and say, well, he never won the world championship, never won the IC title, never was a tag title, but again, I just based on his career in Mid-South and how popular he was at that time, and it seemed kind of a parallel, I think, a little bit with Tatanka. The guy was super over, as you were saying, had a huge following, and if I had to vote for him one way or another, I would put him in the WWE Hall of Fame. So,
yeah, but you know, that's the thing about it is that, I've been guilty of this myself, of putting guys in the Hall of Fame based strictly off of them being champions.
Right.
I remember for years and years and years in WCW where Chris Benoit never held a belt, but he was the best wrestler they had out there besides Eddie Guerrero. I think from now on, when we talk about people being in the Hall of Fame, I'm going to start really looking at their overall character and their in-ring ability, more so than them being a champion, to determine whether they go into the Hall of Fame or not.
I think those are really two good examples, Tatanka and JYD. Neither held a championship, but I think both, I mean, JYD is in the WWE Hall of Fame.
Right.
And I think Tatanka someday probably will be, and just unfortunate, I guess he won't get into our Hall of Fame. I'm talking about Junkyard Dog, but maybe people remember that he didn't hold any titles in WWF at that time, which is unfortunate. He never really got the world championship, as I said, because Hulk Hogan was the number one babyface. He was always the number two babyface. They never turned JYD heel, so he never had a run at the championship, which that was his situation. I mean, he was a guy that, I remember back in the 80s, they would run, what, two or three house shows the same night? A, B, and C crews? He could headline one of your B house shows as a main attraction because the guy was so over, he didn't even need a championship.
Right.
So
some guys
that's
just
why
don't
need
the belt. I mean, Jake Roberts never held the WWE championship or the Intercontinental championship.
That's true. Good point. So you can continue to vote at Gerwick.net on JYD. Hopefully that percentage changes. I hate to see him get less than 50%. That seems pretty alarming. But you can also vote currently. What did you think of last night's Battle Royal pay-per-view? How would you grade it? And then what was the best match on the show? And I think looking at this voting, Frank, it was a no-brainer what was the best match on the show was last night.
Yeah. The 2 out of 3. Gets my thumbs up. Yep.
Go to girlwig.net, vote on those current polls. And also I want to mention, when I was watching this pay-per-view last night, now Frank D has mentioned this before on this podcast, and I had never seen the promo. You were talking that they were running this promo to hype up Saturday Night's Main Event reruns, a classic 80s TV show, playing the Animotion music in the background, the Obsession song. And last night they ran that during the Battleground pay-per-view. Now, this is the first time I've ever seen it, and I guess I didn't fully get the full effect from what you were saying until actually I saw it last night. And just how lame to use that song in the promo, and yet if you go to the episodes, they have dubbed over music. I was very offended by it, and I should have been super offended by you just telling me. But when I saw it last night, Frank, you talk about lameness to nth degree, that here they are running the song as the promo, but when you go watch the episode, this is some generic dubbed over music.
Yeah, it's the old, like you said, when we were prepping for the show, bait and switch tactic. It was a tease.
Yep.
Pretty much what it was. And I told you that, and I'm like, it pissed me off.
It pissed me off, too.
It was garbage.
It got me to Twitter real quickly. I couldn't believe they did that. But I guess I shouldn't have been. I mean, you told me about it, and I guess when you told me about it, it didn't ring full effect until I saw it. I guess I had to see it to really be offended the same way you were offended. And when I saw it, I just couldn't believe they would put it like that to really imply that the music is there. And then when you go to the episodes in the archive section, of course the music is gone. But I know one thing that probably made you happy last night with the pay-per-view was that Big Gold was still there.
Yeah, Big Gold is still alive and kicking. I thought they had retired. I even sent out a tweet last week saying RIP, and I had a picture of the Big Gold belt. And John Cena came out last night with Big Gold. I think that, I mean, I read reports on the internet that they actually had retired this championship belt, and it was retired on WWE.com. And I don't know if somebody made a mistake, and they actually list the World Heavyweight title, I believe, as retired on WWE.com because it is no longer a singles belt. It is combined with the WWE championship to make one belt. So I think that's where people got the mistake by thinking it was retired. So that's,
I thought it was retired myself.
Yeah, that's where the confusion.
It definitely implied it.
Yeah, because on the website they also list the WCW belt as retired, which it is. So
true, right? But Big Gold was back at least last night at the pay per view, and so that's kind of our, I guess that's our thoughts right now with WWE. Because we got to turn our attentions to TNA a little bit, and I know you and the Jackal did a shoot podcast over the weekend on Bully Ray, and I just have to do a little bit of a follow-up, and this is something we've already mentioned here on the podcast, but TNA really needs a functional PR department. They need to have a policy for social media, and it has to start at the top. I mean, we've talked about Dixie Carter on this podcast. You challenge her to come on this podcast and address these issues. I think somebody at TNA needs to go on a public forum like this, Facebook, Twitter, whatever it is, TNA's website, and address these issues because it keeps popping up. We've seen Dixie Carter go on a rant with fans mentioning that the TNA product is too similar to WWE, and then she deletes her tweet. We've seen Kurt Angle make all kinds of comments on Twitter and then say that, you know, he had the wrong password or somebody stole his password, whatever the situation may be. We've had MVP go nuts on the fans on Twitter. We've been called parasites by Magnus in interviews. And now the most recent one was Bully Ray basically saying, go F yourself if you're critical of the TNA product. And as you were saying on that shoot podcast, Frank, you have to have the kahunas that if you're a public figure in professional wrestling, that fans are going to be critical. Now, some fans are out of touch, and we understand that. Some fans make no sense. We get that. But people make legitimate criticisms of TNA's product, and it seems like everybody in TNA just can't take it. And I don't understand this mentality of if somebody criticizes you on Twitter, either you shoot them down or you just block them. If you're going to be on social media, if you're going to be in a public forum where fans can – tweet you at any time, have the kahunas to take it. And I think what WWE's policy is, and let's face it, John Cena, Vince McMahon, these guys get all kinds of hate tweets. You know they do. But they never publicly address them through Twitter. The best thing to do is ignore it. Don't block fans. They're entitled to their opinion. As you said so many times on this podcast, Frank, we're the fans that support wrestling. We buy the products. We buy the DVDs, we go to the shows, we buy the T-shirts, et cetera, and if you can't take criticism from your fans, you're just in the wrong profession, period.
Yeah, totally. And that's the point that we were trying to make when me and the Jackal, you know, came out here the other night and did the shoot podcast on Bully Ray. We were simply trying to expose the fact that I came out here last week and I put over TNA like $1 million talking about the Impact show and how good it was and how they, you know, have a long way to go. And I thought everything was cool. And I even invited Dixie Carter to come over and do a podcast with us. You know, I've said that on Twitter. I've said that, you know, on the shoot podcast. And then the Jackal, who has, you know, an association here with Gerwig.net, he's done some podcasts with me. He's also does a lot of, you know, behind the scenes stuff as far as graphics and stuff for us. So when he tells me that Bully Ray blocked him for him criticizing, which is something Bully Ray said about going back to WWE in a heartbeat if they called him, for him to be in something about spoilers, for him to be blocked and called a moron, insulted by a public figure, which is Bully Ray, who was a professional wrestler, I thought it was wrong. And it needed to be talked about. It needed to be exposed. This is the kind of unprofessionalism that comes out of TNA, and it's not right. You don't treat fans that way, especially when you're at a point where you need people, especially at a point where you do two stadium shows over the weekend and you only draw, looks like, 100 people. So both. And you have the audacity to call people morons. If you if you put as much emphasis on the TV show and on your character as you do calling fans morons, maybe Impact Wrestling, TNA, the dead brand, would be in a lot better place than it is right now.
Yeah, I think the dead brand's going to stay in effect. When you run two house shows over the weekend at outdoor baseball stadiums, and you draw 300-400 fans. I know one report was from Eric Montgomery, who went to the show in Louisville, who's sent us all kinds of stuff over the years. And I said, he sent us results, and I said, okay, thanks for the results. And I was, what do you think the attendance was? And he said, honestly, between 300-400 fans. And you have a situation where you put the ring on the field and you put ringside seats around the ring, and then you see a picture and there's hardly anybody sitting there. And these pictures circulate on the internet. They're on Facebook, they're on Twitter, they're on Gerwick.net because it's newsworthy. If WWE would draw 500 fans to a live show, it was that empty building and I got a picture of it, you darn right I'd post the picture.
Right.
That's what we do here. It's news.
Yep.
I'm not picking on TNA. This is the situation they're in. You watch Impact, and I said, did they hype Louisville? Did they hype Lexington that they're coming to these shows? And you said that, they may have ran a graphic for it. But, if the weekend comes and they're going to be at these shows, outdoors, hype it up. Have Mike Tenay talk about it. Have Taz talk about it. Say, hey, want to see a different experience, TNA? How about TNA outdoors? How about the six-sided ring outdoors on a baseball field that you can check out? You can sit ringside and see all the action in Louisville, in Kentucky, in Lexington, etc. And yet they don't do that. They don't hype those up. And people could say, well, they didn't know about the show. Well, hey, whose fault is that? I don't know. I think you said this before, Frank. How do you not cancel the show? If you know only 300 fans are at the show, you're going to lose more money by running the show. Why not just cancel the show? Because these pictures are on the internet, and it makes TNA look like a bush league. Independent shows with no television draw bigger houses than TNA with Spike Television.
House of Hardcore.
Exactly. It's beyond moronic right now with TNA. And as you said, they're free to come on this show. And anybody from TNA, anybody who wants to represent TNA, if TNA PR department's listening, give us somebody from TNA that can address these issues. We'll be very fair about it, but I think there's certain issues that need to be addressed, such as you criticizing fans, calling them morons, calling them parasites, deleting tweets. This is a public forum. You can't just delete a tweet and pretend it didn't happen, because it happened. And there's just so many issues right now with TNA that they should address in a public forum. So, Dixie, if you want to represent, you're the head dog. If you want to come on this podcast, Frank D and I will ask legitimate journalistic questions. We're not going to come out and rip anybody. Anybody from TNA comes on this podcast, we're not going to rip them. It's their chance to defend what's going on in TNA, if they can defend it. I don't know. I don't know if they can defend what's going on in TNA. Maybe that's why they don't have somebody come on our show, on our podcast. Jeremy Borash, if he wants to come on this show, more than happy to have Jeremy Borash on this show, on this podcast.
Yeah.
Any of them.
Exactly. But, there's always had a little bit of – they've always had a little bit of heat with us over the years. And I don't know if that heat still exists or not. I would think that old bygones would be old bygones. But
that was a long time ago.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah, a long time ago.
A long time ago. So I would think that all that stuff would be gone now. People aren't even there anymore. So
that's right.
So, this is a new day. And I said to Dixie, I said, you know what? I'd love for you to come on a podcast with me and Steve and defend TNA, defend all the criticism of TNA. And I thought that would be a good idea to do that. And she can actually bring Jeremy Borash himself and come on here. It doesn't matter. Just have somebody come up here and answer the questions the fans want to know the answers to. I know Dixie has conducted a youth shoot with kayfabe commentaries, but a lot of stuff just wasn't answered. A lot of stuff was pushed under the rug, and we want legitimate answers to the criticisms of TNA. If you know a show is going to drive, a show is doing 200 or 400 people, why would you let that show be done in the first place? Why not cancel that show? I'm pretty sure they get an advancement on the tickets, how many they're selling. So why not just cancel the show altogether? You need to stay in your highest markets. But, until TNA gives us a response to come on here or whatever, I'm just not going to give any more ideas as to how they can, you know, forward their product at some point.
As you were saying, we were doing show prep, I said, well, you know, did they hype those stadium shows? And you said, not really. And I said, and you said, well, maybe they didn't really hype them up because they knew the advance, and why push it? And I thought, that'd be the whole reason to push it. Say, hey, we're going to have the stadium show. If you're in the Louisville area, if you're in Lexington, Kentucky, come out to the show. And then I was also thinking, Frank, with Louisville, they had a relationship with Danny Davis. They had a relationship with OVW. If they would have continued that relationship, I mean, Danny Davis should have been the promoter for this show, and they would have sold a lot more tickets than 300-400 fans at a baseball stadium show. It's just mind-boggling what's going on, and the offer still stands. You can come on this podcast, put over your talent, put over Spike Television, put over your pay-per-view. You can come out here and plug Bound for Glory, but come out on a public forum and address the situation right now. I think you owe it to the fans, and I will say in defense of Dixie, I remember she did a conference call maybe a year ago, maybe 2 years ago. I can't remember now, but I remember the one thing she was asked about was, are the TNA pay-per-view estimates accurate? And she says, no, they're really not accurate. Okay, come out here and tell us, what are the accurate numbers? I mean, those are legitimate questions, and we would ask legitimate questions of you right now. In fact, one of the legitimate questions is, Frank, why is Vince Russo back at TNA? And we know that Spike TV is not a fan of Vince Russo, and we don't have a deal yet announced, although we definitely expect, you know, TNA Wrestling is going to stay with Spike TV, and maybe at the next set of tapings I'll officially announce it, but why is Vince Russo back in TNA?
One word, desperation.
It must be. I mean, how many times have we tried this pony?
Right.
And it doesn't work. But then again, this is a company that has Christy Hemme on their creative staff.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, who cares? You know, if that's what they want to do, they want to get, you know, Russo. If that's, they feel that's their savior. Hey, Russo did a lot of good for WCW too. So.
Well, I don't know. You know, if Spike TV's not a big fan of Vince Russo, why touch him right now? Isn't there anybody else in wrestling? And we always go back to, well, they need Heyman, they need Cornette, or even the Russo defenders will say they need Russo. Isn't there any young minds in wrestling? You know what, Gabe Sapolsky booked Ring of Honor successfully for how many years? I'm going to give him a crack at it.
Yeah.
Delirious in Ring of Honor is doing an excellent job booking Ring of Honor right now. Why not give him an opportunity? I mean, isn't there any young minds in wrestling that can book wrestling product?
If you give Delirious a chance in TNA, that means Delirious would be out of Ring of Honor.
True. And that would hurt Ring of Honor.
Exactly.
So,
if there's any young minds in wrestling that can book wrestling, yes. Name is Frank D. I can book TNA.
Sign him up.
Yeah, I know how to book TNA. You know what? You know how I book TNA? I sell it to WWE. That's what I do.
I was going to say, push it into the trash can.
I sell it to WWE. No, I'm just joking. I wouldn't sell it to WWE. What I would do though is I would, you know, it would have to be, everything would have to be changed, man. You'd really have to start from scratch with that and try to rebuild the audience. And I would actually ship it to the West Coast. I bring that here to California.
A true reboot.
Yep.
Not just putting the six-sided ring back in the arena. That means nothing, Frank.
Yeah, it really does. Nothing. It really does.
It means nothing. They hyped that big poll up about fans deciding they want the six-sided ring back. They just were looking for something new again. I mean, it doesn't mean anything. It's not the star of the show. The star of TNA Wrestling is not the six-sided ring.
Right.
You don't go to a TNA Wrestling event to see the six-sided ring. Look at the fans in Louisville, Lexington. They didn't go to the show to see the six-sided ring. I mean, they could have sat ringside at a baseball stadium and saw it up front, up close in the light of the day.
Yep.
They didn't go to the show, so got to come up with something better than a six-sided ring.
I mean, I can only imagine, man, being security at that show and being like, okay, we got, you know, 100 guards out here. Wow, the security guards are outnumbering the fans.
Probably a line of security guards going to the bathroom. I mean, my goodness.
Hey, there's a security guard saying, is this all the people that are going to show up?
You're about halfway through the show. I was like, I think this is it.
Yeah.
Huh. And another thing I got to say, and not to beat a dead horse, but when TNA does six matches on a show, and a lot of times the show is at 1 hour and 50 minutes, barely 2 hours a lot of times, even with an intermission, I just think you're not really getting bang for your buck. I'm not saying every show should be 2 hours and 45 minutes or 3 hours. But, Frank, when I go to a wrestling show, I expect to be there at least 2.5 hours.
Right. Four-hour shows are a bit much. That's I remember when I went and saw TNA at the Las Vegas Impact tapings. And, my God, man, it just went on and on and on and on. It just went in. It was like, God, I don't want to leave.
And that's how I felt about Ring of Honor. Ring of Honor this weekend was in Dearborn, Michigan. I actually thought about going to the show, but I knew it was going to be, you know, they're going to tape, they taped 4 hours of television. The show starts about 7 or 7.30, and it doesn't get over until midnight.
Yeah.
And that's like four and a half hours plus. And I love Ring of Honor. I love their wrestling, but I don't want to see Ring of Honor for 4.5 hours. I don't want to see anything for 4.5 hours, to be honest with you.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and of course, Ring of Honor this weekend, I just want to mention they had a best of show with showing highlights of the pay-per-view that you saw in Nashville, Best in the World. They had Cedric Alexander against Roderick Strong, plus they had the television title match with Jay Lethal, which was a good show, and they had a couple of the dark matches that they didn't show on the pay-per-view as well. And I guess this weekend now you'll start seeing some new episodic television, to use that phrase, with Ring of Honor. They'll start having some new shows. They taped 4 shows, as I said, over the weekend. You'll start seeing some new shows. I know Frank D won't, because they don't show the show in your area.
No, they don't.
But to the Ring of Honor fans out there that get a chance to see the television, or subscribe on ROHWrestling.com, the on-demand section, you can check out the shows ahead of time. You'll at least start seeing some new shows. And I guess we'll see where they go, Frank, with Ring of Honor, because, you know, Kevin Steen looks like he's leaving, and we're going to find out what's going to happen with their world title situation. Michael Elgin is the champion now, Unbreakable. Michael Elgin, as I mentioned before, I think in the last podcast, AJ Styles is coming back to Ring of Honor in August. So we'll see where they go with the world title situation. It'd be interesting pay-per-view if they do AJ Styles versus Michael Elgin for the championship.
Yeah, it would be, but we just have to wait and see what happens, and hopefully, but by the time it comes around, we'll have, you know, a better lighting treatment for the show too,
right?
Because it's just their whole lighting is not good.
And I did see Bad Influence is back on the show as well. So if you're gonna check out the Ring of Honor, because you can't see Daniels and Kazarian on TNA Impact Wrestling, Spike TV, so you can check out them on Ring of Honor Wrestling. It's amazing to me that Kazarian and Daniels, and no disrespect to Ring of Honor, but how are they on Ring of Honor, not in one of the other two big brands right now? It's amazing.
I mean, TNA, I don't really consider TNA to be a big brand. I mean,
but they do have television.
They do. They're a big brand by default.
Yeah.
I mean, the big brand is obviously WWE.
Until they run a house show and they get 350 fans.
I mean, imagine the Usos versus Bad Influence.
Oof. I'd like to see it.
Two out of three falls.
Wow. Incredible. In fact, I did hear that the Bad Influence match on the taping is one of the better matches, so I don't know if it's going to be this weekend or the next weekend, but you'll have the Bad Influence match, so definitely check it out, or check it out on ROHWrestling.com as well. So, what we also want to mention, as we said up front, we're on iTunes. You can download our podcast. We're on TuneIn. We're on Stitcher, Spreaker. Check us out there. If you can't check us out at Gerwick.net, you can take us on the road. You can listen to us on your mobile devices. You can listen to us on your cell phones, whichever platform you prefer. And we're also accessible through email if you have any questions for us, comments, concerns. Address it to GerwickReport@Gerwick.net. And if TNA is listening, they can use that email address to email us some correspondence about having somebody on the show. Frank D is on Twitter at RealFrankDEE. I'm on there at Gerwick. We're on there together as the Gerwick Report on Twitter. And, of course, you can find me on Facebook, Steve Gerwick, and Gerwick.net. So, Frank D, as we said in closing here, that challenge is out there. We'd be more than happy to have him on this podcast.
Absolutely. I mean, if TNA has the guts, if they really have the guts and they really care about their fans, and they really want to get across their brand, come on the Gerwick Report podcast, come up here with me and Steve, and we'll talk about it. The challenge is out there. The challenge is open. I'm also going to reissue the challenge on Twitter as well. Come on here, and let's do the damn thing.
Yep. Anybody from TNA is invited to be on the Gerwick Report podcast. as he said, to send a tweet out to the public relations department, send a tweet out to Dixie, send a tweet out to Jeremy. You know, reach out to him. We're here for you. If you want to come on and have a fair conversation, we're here for you. So definitely would encourage that as well. So, again, we appreciate you listening to the Gerber Report podcast. Frank D., as always, I enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it as well, man. I think this is one of the better ones. We're only going to get better.